and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, December 31st, 2020. Health workers at the Infectious Disease Unit threaten to go on strike.
We, the responders, will be laying down our tools effectively from the 31st of December 2020. The whole crews or the whole unit working healthcare workers said, if nothing had to happen at all, we have informed the media, nothing happened, then immediately on the 31st we are going to lay down the tools.
And South Sudanese musicians are regarded as the country's prophets.
Being a Christian, my father is a Christian, my mother is a Christian, and I was encouraged to always be in the church. And in the church, they always teach you good things, how to behave. And then I pick interest, and there I got a lot of messages.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Health workers at South Sudan's Public Health Emergency Health Center are threatening to go on strike if their incentives are not paid by January and their working conditions are not improved. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
The health workers are asking the high-level COVID-19 task force and the Ministry of Health to release money in the form of 6 months of incentives approved for the 10 COVID-19 response teams in the country. The head of the Public Health Committee, Dr. John Mabiora Guto, says the high-level task force formed by President Salva Kiir has done very little to take care of health workers at the Public Health Emergency Center, and workers caring for COVID-19 patients will go on strike in January.
We, the responders, will be laying down our tools effectively from the 31st of December 2020. The whole crews or the whole unit working healthcare workers said, if nothing had to happen at all, we have informed the media, nothing happened, then immediately on the 31st, we are going to lay down the tools. Nobody will work. So by 2020-21, there will be nobody come to work because it's nobody taking care of us.
Aguto says health workers who have been at the forefront of the fight against COVID-19 have not been able to speak with senior management at the Ministry of Health to address various grievances.
We are not being given incentives. We are not insured. We are not taken care of. We don't have off times. Some of us have been infected. We don't even know how much are we to be paid. We don't know the date. We don't know the times. These are challenges that we have. We try to know them as the management. What is the date? How much to be paid? When is it to be paid? But nothing come out.
The Secretary of the Committee of Public Health Emergency Operations Center, Dr. Majok Philip, says he contacted the COVID-19 Task Force and Ministry of Health officials and was told health workers will be paid in December.
It was mentioned that on the 15th of December, there will be a better news for you. If we don't pay you by that date, we will fix a date for payment. Up to now, people have not been paid. Responders have not been given a fixed date. So we kept talking to them, saying that let's wait for appropriate feedback from the management, and nothing came. At some point, we were supposed to be briefed by the undersecretary, who came late. He came at 7 and most people had left.
Dr. Philip says a rushed decision by the Ministry of Health to allow the MedBlue laboratory to operate has resulted in a build-up of COVID-19 cases that have not been included in the official government records of COVID cases in South Sudan. He says most people who tested positive at MedBlue laboratory cannot be traced and managed. MedBlue was the only private laboratory authorized to test COVID-19 samples by the National Task Force on COVID-19 on 3rd December by Vice President and Chairman of National Task Force on Coronavirus, Hussein Abdelbaghi Akol, and the Ministry of Health. National and international travelers must be tested for COVID-19 when they leave South Sudan through Juba International Airport and other exit points from the country. Nationals must pay $75, while foreigners pay $150 for the test. MedBlue Program Manager Dr. Polis Simon refutes claims that they are not reporting positive cases for tracing and isolation to the Ministry of Health. Dr. Simon says the laboratory was inspected and has fulfilled all requirements as instructed by the Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization. He tells South Sudan in Focus that the management of positive cases is the responsibility of the Ministry of Health.
We have a very small case management team here, and they have the big case management team. So when we give the information, we submit the information, all the contacts, all the information of the positive cases to the IDU, to the Ministry of Health, to go and trace that positive cases, or they have the address, they have the number, and they have the emails and every single details. Then we have our case management team here who follow up also. They call them. How are you? Are you today? Are you good? The Minister of Health call you. Okay, and then the case management team, our case management team, and then we'll tell that this case did not be called, so please take care of them. After the 7 days, this is the new protocol of the WHO. After 7 days, our case management team, they will call them.
Dr. Philip says the lives of some senior citizens who mingle with infected individuals are at risk.
We think they are not ready to respond. Even testing, I don't know how they are keeping their sample, because all positive samples should be kept. They should be catalogued and stored under a specific temperature so that they can still be viable.
Dr. Philip says some patients tested by MedBlue have called the Public Health Emergency Health Center to confirm their results.
A 666 is being called every day by positive people who are at home and they are doubting their results. People are coming here saying, I was tested in MedBlue and sent here to this place. Even the incident manager once sat inside there with somebody who was sent from MedBlue. So it's nothing new. Why they are not acting at their capacity, I have no idea.
Health workers say MedBlue Laboratory is not an accredited facility in South Sudan, and its instruments such as SOPs and testing reagents have not been validated by the Public Health Laboratory of South Sudan per the Health Organization standards. Dr. Philip says MedBlue poached some health workers from the government-owned Public Health Laboratory. He says the Ministry of Health should recall its staff working for MedBlue to respond to COVID-19 in the country. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
From Juba, we move a little bit to Uganda, where Ugandan soldiers arrested opposition presidential candidate Bobi Wine during a campaign stop on Wednesday. This is the third time Wine has been arrested after launching his campaign to unseat President Yoweri Museveni. Hours later, a human rights lawyer who had documented state violence against Wine's supporters was released on bail. For VOA News, Alima Thumani reports from Kampala.
Singer-turned-politician Bobi Wine was making a campaign appearance in the Kalangala district when soldiers took him into custody. Joel Senyonyi is the spokesperson of Wine's National Unity Platform Party, or NUP.
Kalangala is not one of the districts where campaigns were banned, so he went to campaign, but to his shop, when he got there, the military surrounded him and arrested the entire team, 90 of them, took them to different places. We understand he's being airlifted, we don't know to where.
Senyonyi says the Museveni government is trying to frighten the NUP.
But clearly, all these are illegal acts being done by the regime to intimidate us, to break our resolve, but we are a lot more resolute than ever before. We'll keep pressing on, we'll keep going. Mr. Museveni must go.
The Ugandan police, in a statement, asked the public to disregard what they call false claims by the National Unity Platform that Wine has been arrested. Police say Wine was restrained for continuously holding massive rallies amid the threat of coronavirus in what police called a total disregard of the Electoral Commission and Ministry of Health guidelines. The police say Wine is being transferred to his home in the capital, Kampala. They also say that part of Wine's advance team was arrested because they were caught on camera deflating the tires of police motor vehicles, inciting violence, obstructing police officers on duty, violating the health and safety protocols, and various traffic offences. Earlier in the day, human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio was released on bail after 9 days in prison. Authorities have charged Opio with money laundering. Critics say he is being prosecuted for his support of the opposition. Opiyo followed proceedings of his bail hearing on video from the Kitalia government prison facility. A state prosecutor asked court not to grant him bail, arguing that his case was of a grave nature, attracting a prison sentence of 15 years. However, Justice Jane Kajuga turned down the request.
I'm inclined to grant bail rather than decline it. It is this court's decision that the ends of justice will be met by granting the applicant bail.
According to the Human Rights Organization Chapter 4, at the time of his arrest, Opiyo was collecting evidence surrounding killings and arrests that occurred during 2 days of protests last month. 56 people were killed in clashes between opposition supporters and security forces after Wine was arrested in mid-November. Critics say the Ugandan government has been targeting civil society organizations and leaders, particularly those who have taken part in election activities. Uganda holds a presidential election on January 14. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
From Uganda, we move to Chad, where there is good news for refugees. Last week, the government of Chad passed a law that grants new rights to refugees fleeing persecution and hardship in neighboring countries. The benefits include right to work legally, to receive education and health care, and granting two-step appeal process if an applicant's asylum status is initially denied. The new legislation is being hailed by national and international human rights and refugee groups, including the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. To find more, VOA Adams Philip spoke with Roberta Montevich, a UNRA spokeswoman and operations assistant in Chad. She began the conversation by praising the new refugee law as a landmark.
It's a major step forward to the country and to the region in general. Chad was the only country in the Western Africa without an asylum law.
How are refugees able to be granted asylum in Chad now? I understand there are two main ways.
Yes, one is to group refugees, which is generally the case, for example, of the Sudanese refugee and refugees that came from the Central African Republic in the past and Nigeria.
When you say a group, do you mean people from one place or people who actually cross the borders physically together into Chad?
The Refugee Convention of 1951 has to have a personal persecution story, while the African Convention speaks more about massive displacement of population across border and massive violation of human rights. So if you belong to that group, you can then be recognized as a refugee. So it's very generous. That's typical in African context. Other things in which the law of Chad is much more generous is, for example, when it comes to the family reunification principle. Imagine in your country, my country, it will be generally limited to the nuclear family, while in Chad is extending to the extended families, which is more, I would say, fit into the African context.
What's the second major aspect to the new law?
The second part is that it provides freedom of movement of refugees, and it provides access to healthcare like a right, not just as an entitlement that can happen or not happen, and rights for education, rights to work legally, access to justice, and then family reunification also in a very broad sense. So it's really very good law at the international level and at the regional level.
Why did this law come to pass and why now?
One key moment was the Global Refugee Forum in 2019 when Chad was among the African countries that pledged for improving the legal, physical, material protection of refugees. That was most likely a trigger. And the fact that Chad was maybe the only remaining country in the Central and West Africa without an asylum law, and that is the root of these latest changes. So the law is coming to put an end to a legal vacuum. Well, I have to say that Chad is recognized to be a country with, I would say, legendary hospitality. And you know, now approximately 3% of the population of Chad is made of refugees and displaced people. So in that sense, it's really doing great. I mean, it's exemplary.
Tell me, where do most of these refugees come from?
The majority of refugees, approximately 375,000 refugees that are now in Chad, come from Sudan. Then the second biggest group, close to 97,000, are people coming from Central Africa Republic, and then the last group, Nigerian refugees, about 17,000.
Do these refugees go to camps mostly?
Yes. Majority of refugees now are still in the camps, but then more and more the approach that UNHCR is advocating is breaking the boundaries between the camps and the surrounding villages in order then to be sure that whatever assistance you give to refugees will also benefit the local population.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up is music part of advocacy in South Sudan. Stay tuned for an answer to that question right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we joined, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Britain approved another vaccine for coronavirus Wednesday. This one is developed by Oxford University and the pharmaceutical firm AstraZeneca. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, scientists say the vaccine could be a game changer in the global fight against the pandemic.
The approval of a new vaccine is welcome as Britain suffers a surge of coronavirus infections. Regulators say the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine has shown around 70% effectiveness against COVID-19, a relatively high figure compared to many vaccines for other diseases, and is safe to use. Dr. June Rain is the chief executive of the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency.
As I've said before, and I will say again today, the safety of the public always comes first.
The AstraZeneca vaccine is a boon for developing nations. It costs around $3 to $4 per dose and only needs to be stored at refrigerator temperatures. Dr. Simon Clark, a microbiologist at the University of Reading, spoke to VOA via Skype.
Developing countries with less sophisticated cold chain and with smaller budgets will be able to use this vaccine.
Earlier this month, several Western nations approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, which is around 95% effective. But not only is it more expensive at around $20 per dose, it must be stored at minus 70 degrees Celsius. Research into the optimum dosing regime for the AstraZeneca vaccine is ongoing. Britain plans to administer the first dose to as many people as possible, rather than focusing only on elderly and vulnerable groups. A second dose will follow up to 12 weeks later for longer-term protection. Again, Dr. Simon Clark of the University of Reading.
There is government pressure to increase the coverage of vaccination. And that's understandable. People want it done as quickly as possible. But if you end up putting more people in hospital because they're vulnerable and they didn't get the full regime of the vaccine, then that means that our hospitals are still going to be under pressure.
The British government has welcomed the approval as a cause for great optimism. British Health Secretary Matt Hancock.
We can now see our route out of this pandemic.
But the road to recovery will be difficult. Britain is struggling with a surge of infections driven by a new variant of the coronavirus that doctors say is over 50% more infectious. There are record numbers of hospitalizations, with patients being treated in ambulances as hospital beds are running short. Will Broughton is from the British College of Paramedics.
Control room staff are having to make incredibly difficult decisions to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order, quite often with huge numbers of people waiting for ambulances and they have nobody left to send.
Several cases of the new mutant virus have now been found in other countries. Scientists say its spread makes the global rollout of vaccines even more urgent. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And there is no better way we can end the year 2020 other than bringing music to you. South Sudanese musicians have been in the forefront advocating for change in the country using music. As 2020 comes to an end, we spoke with two popular South Sudanese musicians to learn about the importance of music and the issues close to the hearts of musicians in the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
If you must come to public, please use mask. Corona is real. Take care.
That is one of Emmanuel Lasso's latest songs entitled Corona. The song is getting lots of airtime on many radio stations across South Sudan. The lyrics of the song are about awareness and taking preventive measures against COVID-19. Lasso, one of South Sudan's popular musicians, says he developed his music skills and talents early in a church choir.
Being a Christian, my father is a Christian, my mother is a Christian, and I was encouraged to always be in the church. And in the church, they always teach you good things, how to behave. And then I picked interest, and there I got a lot of messages. And then the messages that I got, I feel I need to share with my brothers and sisters. That's how I developed.
Lasso says he started producing his own songs in 2005. His first album had several songs advocating for peace and unity in South Sudan.
Minga bejibu guru Somalian, nazmund guru bejibu guru suketir.
Lasso, who sings in a simple Arabic, produces songs that try to bring people together. Like O Mamaland Sudan, Aulat Sudan Kelna Wogif Goi, and Intom Junubin Kelna Fata Ena, songs that are still hitting the airwaves on radio stations in South Sudan. In this song, Intom Junubin, he warns South Sudanese about the dangers of tribalism and asks citizens to unite as they prepare for the 2011 referendum. Lasso says music puts him in the right place to communicate his message to fellow South Sudanese.
We are many in this world. And then my focus is not only my tribe mates, my focus is not only into my own area, but my focus is like focusing the whole country. So I, as a person, I cannot, even if I have good message, I cannot be able to share with everyone. So sharing it one by one will be difficult, and then I thought it wise to put it in that way so that everyone can get the message. Because with song, it goes to everyone. Even those ones who cannot listen your language, they can understand.
Mama, 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 M
Lasu says restoring peace and stability is not only about silencing guns. He says South Sudanese need to unite and work hard to tackle hunger, diseases, and the economic challenges facing the country.
As South Sudanese, we are known of suffering all the time. And then we have a lot of suffering. There is fighting around and many bad things happening in our country. And there's no one who can come from somewhere to come and help us. It is we, the people of South Sudan, we need to fight hard so that we can be able to be in total peace.
Lasso, who is currently working on a new song entitled Dunia De, says musicians have a big role to play in the development of South Sudan. Isaac Kaluma Bagu, known by his stage name Isaka Number One, is another popular South Sudanese artist. Isaka Number One has produced several songs challenging behaviors in the South Sudanese society. Isaka says he was inspired by his father at the age of 5 to start loving music. One of Isaka's latest hits in towns is Finas Maazo Keli Hayatanas Gairo, meaning there are people who do not want to see changes in some people's lives.
Finas Maazo Keli Hayatanas Iraba, Finas Maazo Keli Hayatanas Gairo.
South Sudan's ongoing socio-economic and political challenges have not stopped Isaka from singing. He says there is hope at the end of the tunnel.
I want to assure you that, you know, in the middle of this hardship and these situations that you find yourself, you still have to believe that there's something good out of it. Because there's no way we can just judge, like many people are just saying, you know, maybe it's the end of the world, it's coming, something like this. But we are not in that position to just cut it short like it's the end of the world. No, things happen. We just have to thank God for anything that happened, good or bad. We have to believe that and have hope that things will change.
South Sudanese music genre has borrowed a lot from genres in Sudan, Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Some local South Sudanese traditional musicians have also kept their traditional music alive. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's our last show for 2020. We now leave you with more music from Isaka Number One. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being our avid listener in 2020. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for a new edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kanumona ino wita bika indu boda boda. Kanumona ino wita gairu mobile jedit. Kanumona ino wita bika mul ikilimi. Kanumona ino wita bika mul arabia suker.
Umon mazu kele hayata ki gairu. Umon mazu kele hayata ki sala. Umon mazo kele hayata kigero. Umon mazo kele hayata kisala.
Kandilelja nomu mafilomon. Umon bifekiri ketir zol deligo minwen. Umon marufu gali jere jere ketir. Ita bijere lakadi ita azuaga. Umon marufu jere de indu ni hayato. Umon maruf jere de indu akirtato.
mazo, kele hayata kike imon mazo le.